Good Tuesday, everyone. Welcome to the Blue Water Climate Control VolQuest.com podcast. Glad to have you along with us on this Tuesday. Again, check out our friends at BlueWaterClimateControl.com, or you can find them on Twitter at BlueH2O_climate. With Austin Price, Jesse Simonton, and Rob Lewis, I'm Brent Hubbs. Glad to have you along with us. Several things to jump into in this Tuesday edition of the podcast. Of course, it's a dead period in recruiting. Can't be on the road. Prospects can't be on campus, so it's been pretty quiet there. We'll hit a couple of recruiting things a little bit later in the podcast. Certainly going to talk a lot of hoops in the podcast as well. But I want to dive into this idea and this thought process. The ACC has come out and endorsed the Big Ten's proposal for the one-time transfer. No questions asked. You can transfer one time, and you know you're eligible immediately and that type of thing. It's expected that other conferences will likely follow suit. So this measure at some point is going to pass. So on the surface of that, we've talked about it a little bit before, but as it moves closer to getting passed, you favor that move, not in favor? You think it's complete free agency and total anarchy to college sports? What do you think is the after effects whenever this thing goes into play?
I mean, I totally favor it. I mean, they're kids. It's been treated... I think it's archaic, personally. And maybe it's the fact that, maybe you agree or see it the same way. Maybe it's because I have teenage kids that are getting ready to go to college. But why shouldn't these guys be able to leave and go somewhere else? It just seems commonsensical to me. I can see fans getting upset if a kid goes to a rival school. But if you go somewhere you don't like it and work out, why should you not be able to leave?
And the ball's been rolling downhill.
Oh, yeah. It's been coming.
For a good little while now. And I think when the Big Ten was the first major conference to put out
a year ago
to put out their proposal that anyone could transfer within their conference, well, that immediately, if and when that passes, becomes a recruiting advantage that the ACC is like, well, we don't want to lose to that. So eventually that's going to trickle down to the SEC. I think it's good for the kids, and so I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I definitely think it's good for the kids, and I think it's smart on the conferences like the Pac-10, the Big 12, the Big Ten to push. Hey, let's do this one-time transfer. Then it's easy to sell in recruiting. Look, you come here, we're a great option for you. If not, you can automatically transfer. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like it, and then you get them there, and you hope that they. You sell yourself enough to keep them there.
And how about the concept of it? Has anybody ever made a bad decision as an 18-year-old?
Maybe. I don't know, perhaps. It's got to be whatever. I mean, it can't be on an individual conference deal. It's going to have to be an NCAA rule. There's
right.
No way you can just say individual conferences doing this or that.
Because they're just trying to put pressure on the NCAA
sure
right now.
And they got the ACC to go with them, and I think they'll get other schools to go with them. And I think in light of the Mel Tucker story, which, again, could it have been handled differently? If anybody's read the Sports Illustrated story, should he have gone to the donor meeting and talked about Buff for life and then 2 hours later taken the job? Probably not. But does anybody ultimately blame him for bettering his situation?
No.
I mean, Colorado people can be upset all they want to be, and I get that. That's part of fandom.
Double your salary?
And double the salary pool. And he had just lost one of his best assistants because he couldn't financially match.
Here's the unequivocal truth that we know is going to happen if and when this passes. Much like the early signing period, which many coaches advocated for and now can't stand, whatever happens with this rule, there's going to be snickering behind the scenes of, well, we should have done this. Like the
sure.
Coaches are always, I think, going to have an issue with it. But I think it's by time that the players, gain a little power and have a little agency or more agency in how their careers play out.
Yeah, more control. But I think that you have to really – and, again, how do you do this? How do you police – the tampering, because I think tampering, it already goes on now, but I think that when you open that Pandora's box, the tampering will be.
Like, you recruited a kid, you finish second, he goes,
he's running second team with somebody, and all of a sudden you're like,
he's running third team, not playing, ring, hey, so and so is graduating, you'll be starting here in spring practice. Well, yeah, that's going to happen. But is that the worst thing? I mean, it's not criminal. I mean, it's, you know, it's just,
well,
it's,
I mean,
it's just one more thing to deal with.
Well, but the idea that coaches aren't talking and continue to talk to guys now is, you know, is crazy. I mean, look, when a guy goes into the transfer portal and he already knows where he's going to go to school, you don't think he's talked to that school before he goes into the transfer portal?
And I really think it's, I think it's probably worse than basketball. I mean, we're talking about football for the most part right now, but I mean, the way the grad transfer stuff has been happening in basketball lately, I think that, I mean, I think that's an unwritten story that nobody's gotten a hold of yet, is how much recruiting goes on for a guy like, he's the kid at Kentucky right now. Sistema. I mean, he's not great, but I mean, like, everybody knew last year that he was going to be a grad transfer.
Here's the thing, too, that I don't think a lot of folks realize. If you're the best damn track and field athlete in the country and you go to school X and decide, you know what, I'm done. I want to go to school Y. You can up and go to school Y. There's no penalty for that.
Right.
You can just you can do it once.
Right.
Can't
same
do it twice.
In volleyball.
Same in volleyball. Same in softball.
So the rule
same
is there.
It is literally only for four sports. Right. I think it's really only for baseball, basketball, football, and then it's like a weird one. It might be wrestling, or it's like there's one weird one that you can't do the transfer for. But every other D1 sport, if you're the best at that sport and you're recruited, now again, no, those recruitment, they're not making those signatures on national television. I get there's a, you know, a bit of a disconnect there, but they're allowed to up and leave. Why should a football player or a basketball player or a baseball player be any different?
They shouldn't be. I mean, and they're kids. I mean, because they're on TV, because they're, I mean,
it's ice hockey, by the way.
Ice hockey. I knew it was a weird
one. Hockey.
I knew it was a weird one. It's
just the one that you cannot transfer and be eligible immediately.
I knew it was. It was
John Painter, shout out on the ice hockey.
So
mission.
There you go. You got hockey. You got football. You got men's basketball, and you got women's basketball, and you got baseball.
Frozen
so
four.
That's what you're doing. So let me ask it this way then. For and the reason I brought this topic up, if this is coming down the pike sooner rather than later, and you're the NCAA, how do you handle transfers on the front end before the rule goes into place? The Cade Mazes of the world. If you think this rule's got a chance to be in place in the next year, does it change the NCAA stance? Do they rubber stamp transfers more so?
That's a good question.
Over the next year, because everybody knows, hey, the inevitable is going to happen anyway.
I mean,
do they do that?
Don't you think they look silly if they don't?
I mean, I'm asking the question.
I mean, if
now
they're
loud,
sitting there,
they're not worried about. They haven't worried about looking silly for 50
right.
years. So
that's a point well made.
I don't know what's going to happen in that regard, but I do think what's going to happen. My early prediction would be the coaches are going to very strongly advocate that whenever this rule passes, that you get rid of the 25, and it's just a hard cap at 85. Because the rosters are going to be so wonky.
Ooh,
at times.
That's an interesting thought.
And so this is my prediction is that you're gonna, if they pass this transfer rule, you're gonna have a hard cap at 85. But you know what? Some years you may have to sign 29 guys.
But how much does that open coaches up for the ability to truly cut kids?
Well,
because look, you've had that notion out there, but you kind of limited that because you can't cut a kid and oversign because of the 25 rule. If you take away the 25 rule, how much does that allow a coach to come in and say, you five, you've been here a year and a half, 2 years, you can't play for us, you got to go?
Well, I wouldn't deny that would be something that would come back into the equation. And you know, it would be, again, it would be the opposite side of the player agency. The coaches would then kind of regain some power. But I think for the coaches to want to sign off on this, I think they'll say this is an equitable situation or else – we may only have 73 guys.
Or do you take it up to 30 and 85 to leave you a little bit capped there? Do you know what I'm saying? Do you meet a little common ground as opposed to taking away the total number of 25 and put yourself in a situation where you could sign 35, 40 kids and completely flip your roster in 1 year? Because here's the thing, and I think it's a fascinating discussion. With the way that the 25 and the fact you can't oversign the way you could 5 years ago, certainly 5 years ago, for a new coach coming in, it makes a roster flip hard. And new coaches don't have the leash now that they had 5 years ago when they were a new coach. Now they want it done because of the Kirby Smarts and because of the coaches out there that have won big in year two. There's an expectation there, but you can't flip your roster by signing 30-plus kids.
We talked about this not too long ago on the podcast. Just you go back to when Jeremy was hired – That was the first year of the first the early signing period. Could no longer, you know, you had the cap at 25, you know, could just have carte blanche to try to flip. Look at all the coaches that, you know, that came in the same time Jeremy did that are no longer in their position. I mean, there's a reason for that. It's just because the leash is shorter, the opportunity to try to get quality players when you get the job and 10 days later you got to try to sign a class. So you either sign the guys that the previous staff that got fired had committed, you probably ain't going to agree with those evaluations because everybody wants to sign, quote, their guys. You know, I mean, it just it makes things hard. And Jesse brought up the point. That's why people have, you know, found a way to promote when there's had to be a change because, you know, it keeps the continuity.
Yeah, I think it's harder now.
It's like a combination of all those things, yeah. You know.
It's made it harder for a new coach to for a new coach taking a job.
Yeah.
It's made it much more difficult. So I just thought it was a fascinating look at potential changes. And, Jesse, I had not thought about the lifting of the 25. But you're right. Coaches are going to – and, Rob, you know this as well. You've talked to coaches that all of us have for 25 years. They're okay with a new NCAA rule, but their first thought is, what do I get out of it? Like,
sure.
How can it help me somewhere along the way? That's one of the things, if you're a coach moving around, you realize how hard it is. You want some protection against that 25 number, if you will.
Yep.
And there should be. You know, I mean, you shouldn't get penalized or get a bonus, you know, either way. I mean, there's no reason for it to be punitive, in my opinion.
Well, and again, I mean, the emergence, even without the one-time transfer or immediate eligibility, with the fact that kids are hiring lawyers, seeking waivers, and we've talked about this for several weeks, you got to protect yourself. You got to have a spot available for you against that 25. You better not get to 25 because there may be a difference maker out there that you just don't think you can pass up on, which is why you're almost working off a number like 23 now.
And again, the fact that a kid, a 20-year-old kid, his family needs to hire a lawyer because he wants to go somewhere else and play college football, I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. You know, if you take a step back and look at it.
But that's where we've
got to. I know.
To get eligible, it almost feels – almost guarantee your eligibility, it seems like that's almost a must.
I completely get it. But just if you take a step back and, you know, just – you say a chemistry major, you know, wants to, go from Cal to Stanford, and you know, to think that his parents would have to hire an attorney and go to court and fight a battle. I mean, that's just it's kind of ludicrous on the face of it. If you take a step back,
oh, I don't disagree.
You know, there's no chemistry test on TV. I understand that.
Right, and then there's no money involved with the chemistry test. I mean, you know, it's apples and oranges in that way. But, you know, the restriction of freedom and to move around is obviously on the forefront when you talk about making things better for the student athlete out there. All right, let's talk a little football right quick. Jesse, your story on the wide receiver production I thought was pretty fascinating. I'll admit I was surprised at the analytics at how significant losing receivers meant production at the receiver position, not just losing a receiver, losing productive receivers. How hard it was to replicate that same offense the next year.
I was gobsmacked.
I mean, I was surprised. Because here's where I come from. And again, I know the NFL is different, so it's hard to compare the NFL to the college game. But I look at a guy like Tom Brady, and he's had a bunch of just kind of guys running around at receiver, yet they're throwing for a gazillion yards and a gazillion touchdowns and still have a chance to win. I look at a guy like Peyton Manning. I mean, has Denarius Thomas done anything since Peyton Manning retired?
How much money? I mean,
what about the Decker kid that went to the Jets? Has he made anything since?
Great guy. Don't mean this in a bad way, but how much money did Peyton make Joey Kent or
sure.
Marcus Nash?
Right. So my feeling was it was all quarterback then. Now, I think we'll all agree, everybody acknowledges, receiver production, not receiver production. Tennessee has to play better at the quarterback position. That is a low-hanging fruit bar standard that has to be raised, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Okay. But were you surprised at the analytics, the way it looked out, the way it showed up, the way it did when you did your research?
No. I mean, I had not done the research via Tennessee. This is something that had been on my mind because I had followed it the last couple seasons. Conley's been kind of tracking this as he has looked at the data, where ultimately – wide receiver production, returning wide receiver production, and a returning quarterback basically weighs equally. It basically weighs to about 32% when you break down the returning production for each. So the fact that Tennessee lost such a significant amount, how did that rate historically with the last 10 years of Tennessee? Well, it's second most in a decade, and I think the group that Tennessee lost, we'll see how they perform in the NFL, but it's not too dissimilar from what happened in 2012. Now, obviously, the difference is Bray also left. Garantano comes back. Can Tennessee – and that's the thesis of the piece. I understand that some people raise some like, well, you know, what about a different coordinator or a different – obviously, there's variables,
sure,
you know, in the equation. And some of those seasons –
nothing is absolute.
Yeah, nothing's absolute. And people raised legitimate questions or like – one of the years, technically, Pig Howard came back, but he got kicked off the team pretty early. But he still counts as part of that receiving production. But how did that hit when they didn't perform as well or what have you? But the correlation is evident. I mean, it's and it's not just for Tennessee. You can do that. Other people have done this for other teams. And so the question is, can Tennessee buck the trend? As I wrote, the talent at the wide receiver position I don't think is going to be an issue. But I also think people just automatically saying, and this was a thing raised in multiple threads yesterday, well, D'Angelo Gibbs has been on campus. He's been catching passes. Brandon Johnson has a familiarity. He's been catching passes. Brandon Johnson has caught some passes. I put it in one of the threads. He caught 16 in his big season where he had 32 catches. 16 of those receptions were from JG. But just because some guys have been on campus, even a guy like Cedric Tillman, it's what have you done on the field? That's how this stat matters. Georgia and Stanford and other guys had young guys who were catching passes from Costello and from a year ago in practice, but then when they had to be on the field,
right,
the timing just wasn't right there. They weren't as crisp. They couldn't get the separation. So the question is, can Tennessee buck that trend?
Yeah, I was really intrigued by the piece. I was like Rob. I was surprised it was weighted equally the way it was. Quarterback and wide receiver. I knew the two went hand in hand. Don't get me wrong. I'm not naive enough to say that they don't.
But you thought there was more
go.
Importance on the
I thought the quarterback would be more
way more
important.
And I thought offensive line would be a bigger deal.
Sacks.
Yeah.
And the offensive line yards, and the offensive line is growing. The rushing yards is actually the least. It's at like 6%. Like basically returning running backs in the way that the what historical data has measured out doesn't really matter. But like Florida, for instance, they made a big jump offensively because they returned all those receivers. They returned Kyle Pitts. Felipe Franks ended up, you know, getting hurt, and they had a backup quarterback, and their offense got better. Now, was Felipe not as good, you know, or what?
Sure.
But they were.
But they didn't have this.
Conley predicted this big jump because they returned all these receivers. He predicted. No one knew that Burrow was going to become Joe Montana, but everyone knew that LSU returned probably one of the deepest wide receiver rooms in the country. Boom, their offense goes crazy. And those were just several examples I put in the piece that Conley predicted before the season. And while some want to fight the analytics, I did think some people on the GQ correctly noted, as I put in the piece, you can't have it both ways. A year ago, everyone was getting excited about Tennessee because they were the darling of the analytics community after they won five games.
Right.
And it wasn't just Conley. You know, Sagarin, FPI, these multiple people, because Tennessee returned more bodies on both sides of the ball than almost any team in the country. And we'll have, you know, whether folks thought this was a negative piece or whatever, this is just a reality piece. This is just something to keep in mind if the offense stagnates or regresses. We will have stories coming up on why the analytics are so high on Tennessee's defense, because they return a lot, even though they lost Darrell Taylor.
No kidding. I saw yesterday.
Top 10.
I mean, where's that from? Defense. College Football Talk, Pro Football Focus?
Oh, well, Pro Football Focus has Tennessee, I think, in the top 10. Another one had a weird ranking that I thought was strange.
I mean, I just saw them projected top 10 yesterday.
You think that's just simply because they're bringing all the defensive linemen and their two corners back?
It has a lot to do with that, yeah.
I mean, because the corner weight is pretty significant in terms of bringing your corners back.
The corner is weighted basically the same as quarterback or receivers.
Right. It's the heavyweight deal. Because and that goes from the idea that in Jeremy Pruitt said
you're playing
publicly,
three or four every time.
Well, you got to play. If you can play man on the outside, it frees you up to do whatever you want to do with the rest of your defense.
And teams are playing 65 to 75% nickel,
Right.
And Tennessee's bringing back probably one of the most experienced star nickelbacks in the country in Schamberger. Plus, you know, Bryce Thompson and Alante and Kenneth George, these guys that have played, you know, a decent amount of snaps. So that's why Tennessee's defense is, in most, like in Conley's thing, I think they were like 8 or 9, which is great, like a top 10,
right.
You know, 8 or 9 overall in the country, not in the SEC overall.
Yeah, the running back stuff doesn't surprise me because I think you're seeing that. I think you're seeing the NFL use those analytics when it comes to free agency.
Yeah.
I think that's why Derrick Henry might not get a new deal with the Titans, because you have a short window for those guys' production, and there's so many guys out there that you say, hey, I can take a 6th-round guy. I can take a dude at running back and make him productive.
I mean, what's Alvin Kamara making? 3rd-round pick.
Right.
And one of the, you know, probably top 5 backs in the league.
I think that roster management on the NFL level at the running back position is very much analytics related,
as opposed to
quote, I got
and the shelf talent. Life of that position. There's such a trepidation of investing money, which is why the Rams are having buyer remorse, because Gurley was the MVP candidate in that September, and by November
they've screwed their whole franchise.
By November his knee had messed up where you know he was done.
I mean, they wrecked their franchise with one contract.
Yeah,
they closed their Super Bowl window.
All right, let's talk a little bit about
probably two. Goff is pretty terrible.
Yeah, he was.
They paid him $100 million.
Okay, times two. You spent all your money in those two spots. Baylor Buchanan's tweet, who knows what it means?
AP, come on.
Who knows what it means?
Get your flashlight out.
But
shed some light on it.
But what is – if Baylor Buchanan is back, potentially, how big of a deal is that?
It's a body.
It's better than that. Yeah, I'll go a little better than that. I mean, it's not some – you know, superstar addition, but it's a guy that's played.
I think it's competition at the nickel position, and I think for Sean Schamberger to be at his best, somebody's got to push Sean Schamberger.
I don't disagree with that.
That's fair. I just think Schamberger has a much higher upside.
I don't disagree with that, but I think Buchanan, if he's back and if he can, and I don't know that he is, but let's just say the tweet was some kind of grassy knoll hint that he was coming back, if you will. I think that's a tough guy who competes, that I think Jeremy Pruitt likes his edge about him. And I think one of Jeremy Pruitt's biggest frustrations for Schamberger has been he hasn't always had that edge. Now, I think Derek Hansley got it out of him more a year ago. But I think it's important because, A, it's a body, and, B, it's a guy who can push at the nickel spot. I don't know who's the nickel. If it's not Buchanan, who's the nickel guy behind Schamberger?
That's a good question.
Who's a nickel guy in the
Is it a freshman?
Yeah, I mean, no matter who it is, I think it's somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience.
Right.
So it's an experienced guy if he's back. You don't strike me as a grassy knoll type of guy, though, Hubs.
Yeah, maybe not. But he could also help you if you go 6 DBs. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when you look at who your top 6 could be, you know, what do you do there?
Grassy knoll would be a good handle on VolQuest.
There's probably one out there. It's probably registered to somebody.
I'm stunned that there's not. Grassy knoll Vol. It's there. It's available.
So the current team is working out, going in the weight room. Nothing with the football right now. I know everybody wants to know how the receiver throwing sessions
are going.
How's
Harrison Bailey's arm look?
And all those things. But really, it's not about a football right now. It's about all weight room for this team. And that's kind of where things stand with them. And we'll be that way until you get ready for spring practice, which will start, what, Austin? Second week of March?
March 9th.
Yeah.
March 9th, we get cranked
up.
So
they'll do 1 week. They'll have a week off for spring break, and then reconvene.
So that first week will be a lot of introduction stuff, get through any acclimation
then
period.
Pruitt will complain about how much retention or not retention they had come March 25th or whatever it was.
And we'll find out who handles themselves from a conditioning standpoint over spring break.
I just teed you up, AP.
I mean, we did last year. We didn't have that kind of start-stop. I mean, I felt like I was driving through Gatlinburg.
All right, let's go to recruiting right quick. It is quiet. It is slow. Starting to see some names show up, Austin, for potential junior day visitors. This Auburn basketball game, noon start, that looks like something Tennessee's trying to build around to have some kids on campus there that first weekend of March.
Yeah, correct. They're going to have what's that game at, like a noon?
It's a noon.
You know, so it provides you a chance for it's time for people to get here from North Carolina, from Middle Tennessee, from Georgia. I think that'll be the areas where you see Tennessee try to bring kids in from. I would venture to say they'll try to see if they can get Travion Henderson down here that day. But I think specifically Tennessee kids, Georgia kids, North Carolina kids will be the ones that Tennessee's trying to push to get here that first week.
And that's when we might get the formal announcement that Shelton Felton and Jimmy Brumball are on Tennessee's staff. Maybe they announce it, but they will be introduced, I'm sure.
I thought Mel Tucker announced that.
I think Mel Tucker did announce where Jimmy Brumball was. He took care of that at his little meeting there in Colorado before he – hey, last one, turn out the lights because I'm not coming back meeting that he had before he took the job at Mississippi State. So we'll start to get a sense of some names. Obviously, Tennessee's out there. They've offered a few more kids. They offered a quarterback in California.
Plays for Clawson.
Which makes the quarterback board, a little bit interesting. Kind of where are they in 21? You kind of thought Christian Velilou was climbing up that list, and I think he has moved up that list some, but they're still offering other guys, so I don't know that they've settled in on who kind of is their number one wish guy. I know they like May, but I'm not on the May camp. I just don't think that's going to happen. But I know that that's one that they're still having conversations with. But it looks like there's some fluidity to that board, even though that's a board that comes clean pretty quick with guys committing early, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the big-time guys are off the board. I mean, Vandergriff's off the board, May's off the board. Who's the kid from Texas going to Texas A&M? Stowers, he's off the board. Caleb Williams is the biggest name out there, but I mean, Tennessee's got no traction there. They can't get him to campus. So, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't look at Christian. To me, he would be my number one guy. But I mean, yeah, you have to, until he's in the boat, you have to continue to recruit other guys.
Right.
I mean, the same thing with, in 2022 class with Ty Simpson. Ty Simpson, if he wants to be in the boat, Tennessee will quit recruiting other quarterbacks. Otherwise, Tennessee will have to continue to offer and offer and offer.
Yeah, because the idea that you're going to offer just one quarterback and you're going to hold out for that one guy for 2 years or a year and a half is really impossible to do.
If Peter or Brent, either one of you guys, if Simpson would jump in the boat early with Tennessee,
done,
would they not take a kid in 21?
I think they're taking a quarterback in every class.
Yeah. I mean, I agree, but I'm just saying. I just wonder, is he that
now,
counted?
I think Ty Simpson would scare some kids in 21. There may be some kids hesitant, but Tennessee would still take
a you're already talking about a crazy crowded quarterback room. Harrison Bailey's a freshman.
Well, but Jared will be gone. I think Maurer I think the other two are probably –
somebody's leaving.
Conceivably, both leave.
Maybe both. Yeah, I mean, if Bailey ends up being better than Trout and Maurer, why are you going to stay?
Yeah, I mean, and that's honestly, we've
which
already seen.
Which is why you probably take a quarterback in every class.
Yeah, if not two, sometimes. I mean, let's face it. We go back to the discussion we had to start the podcast. That's a position you already see a greater frequency of transfers, anyways, because only one can play. When you add that rule into effect. Man, you'll have to be taking one or two. I think maybe even two in every class because it's going to be such a revolving door.
Yeah.
You go get here.
If you don't win the job, you're leaving.
Yeah.
Immediately. Is it not like receiver where everybody plays or running back or defensive line?
That'll be the position of greatest transfer. I think it already is.
It already is, but it'll
be. But I think it's magnified if the idea is you do not have to file a waiver and you can just go transfer Power 5 to Power 5 and be eligible.
Yeah, I'm just glad Justin Fields won that hardship when he went from home in Georgia all the way to Columbus, Ohio. I mean,
look, those are part of the reasons why the discussion is out there of allowing a one-time transfer. Because you get a lawyer, you lawyer up, you get the NCAA scared of a lawsuit.
Yeah, he's got the same lawyer as Cade.
And then you win an appeal,
play
immediately. So there you go. More on recruiting moving forward in the next couple of weeks as we get an idea, the next week or so we get a better idea of who's coming for unofficials, who's not coming for an unofficial, and who's on the junior board, who's coming for spring practice and all those things. It'll be a hectic month of March in terms of guys visiting campus. Nothing new on Zach Evans. I know Instagram, he put out some picture with some Ole Miss gear, but all of that remains status quo at this point.
Going to visit Florida.
And then we'll see what happens.
And then we'll see what happens after that.
So mid-March.
And depending on what happens with him, to me, will depend on, will determine a little bit of what happens with Chase Hayden. I think Chase will visit Tennessee at some point this spring. He will be they'll be one of the stops on his tour of schools. So, I mean, what happens with Zach Evans, what happens with anybody else in that room, whether it's Tim Jordan or whoever, to me determines whether you know, Chase Hayden ends up at Tennessee or not.
Yeah, as a possibility or not a possibility. That'll be determined over the course of probably the next 6 weeks or so. Hey, this crazy weather we're having, by the way, Rob Lewis is a big fan of it. It's 75 one day, it's 40 and rainy the next day. You want to turn your air conditioner on one day, you want to turn your heat on the next day. Don't forget to make sure that all your system is in great shape. That's why you need to call our friends at Blue Water Climate Control at 865-299-2290. 865-299-2290 is the way to reach them. They'll come out, they can give you a $79 safety inspection, they can give you a tune-up on your furnace, they can give you a tune-up on your air condition, everything you need to get you ready for the crazy spring that will feature snowflakes and snow flurries and snow showers in the month of March. I guarantee it, that's the way it is in East Tennessee. So you want to make sure your system is in great shape. So to do that, give our friends a call at Blue Water Climate Control. Be sure and give them a call and check them out. Again, if they give you a tune-up and you have an issue after the tune-up during the month of March, they're going to give you a discounted rate on that. So call them and get all the details you need or visit them online at bluewaterclimatecontrol.com. All right, Rob Lewis. Speaking of blue waters, Tennessee basketball team swimming in the deep waters here to close out this basketball season. I don't understand the SEC. I can't figure it out. Auburn looks good. Then Auburn goes and gets manhandled against Missouri.
Gozo. Gozo.
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic Conzo win late in the year after a disappointing year.
To get the 4-8.
You know, just that's a classic win. Seems like Kentucky's surging a bit. Maybe a little bit of reality for LSU that they can't win every one possession game as they have all year long. But for Tennessee, blown opportunity against South Carolina.
Big one.
Must win against Vanderbilt at home tonight. Got to get that. Can't blow another one of those. Cannot blow a home game, in my opinion, down the stretch. Got to win at home.
I'm not.
I don't say blow because you're not going to be favored in a couple of those games. But I think you got to win at home, right?
I mean, I thought this, you know, going back, we talked about it last week. You can't lose another home game. I think after what happened at South Carolina, I mean, I guess they're not technically out of the NCAA tournament right now, but I mean, any hope they have is on life support. I mean, I really feel like they have to go 5-1, which would put you at, 19-12, and that would mean you beat Auburn, and or you beat Auburn twice or beat Kentucky on the road, which I just don't think this team can do that. I mean, if you go 4-2, 18-12, going to Nashville, I mean, what do you think, Hubbard?
Yeah, I think you got to be playing Saturday afternoon. I think you got to be in the semis to have a chance. I think I think if you're at that record,
If you finish 18 and what would that be? 14?
Yeah, something like that.
18-13.
I think you got to play into the weekend.
You got to win Thursday, Friday.
I think you do.
Which means you beat somebody pretty good Friday.
Because the problem is you get no RPI help in your league.
Well, they got no good wins.
Right.
They got no good wins.
Nothing. You got nothing that's helping you.
I mean, if they go 4-2 to finish, they would have beaten Auburn and or Kentucky. But that's one win out of 33 games. And it's not awesome.
Yeah, it's not enough. You know, I don't think. That's why I think you've got to be a team that gets into the weekend that everybody's saying,
yeah,
hey,
I mean, I put it all together. I think the more realistic discussion is, do they make the NIT?
Yeah, I think that depends on what you do over the next six.
Because I don't think they're winning at Rupp. I don't think they're winning at Auburn. There's two losses.
You got to beat Florida at home.
I mean, the way Florida is finally
can
playing.
Can you stun Arkansas on the road?
No gimme.
I mean,
Arkansas is definitely slumping.
But they may get Joe back, right?
Yeah, possibly. We'll see.
Who do you draw in the SEC tournament?
Well, I mean, I don't think Florida – Auburn lost at Missouri. I mean, Auburn is not a juggernaut, but this Tennessee team that we're seeing right now, I don't like their chances to win that game at home.
Here's what's surprising me a little bit about Auburn, and I'll be curious to see how they attack Tennessee.
Now, Okoro was out Saturday.
He was.
Big loss.
Was a loss to them. I thought Auburn – I think for the last couple of weeks, Auburn has gotten in the habit of settling for too many – threes without the ball ever making any kind of move through the lane.
I agree with it.
I think Auburn's at their best when they drive to the paint. And one of the things, look, and I don't want to cause an uproar with Tennessee fans, Bruce Pearl's had success against Rick Barnes every time he's played against him. And part of the reason is they've been able to drive and create help defense, which is in turn giving them a lot of open threes. Going back to Juwan Smith and Dane Bradshaw and that crew going to Austin, Texas, and blowing Texas out.
And I don't think they're using Austin Wiley enough. I mean, it's not an Auburn podcast, but Wiley, I mean, sometimes I think they forget they have it.
Right. But that's a challenge for Tennessee because I think one of the issues for Tennessee remains, can they keep the ball in front of them if somebody really attacks them?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, And I love San Diego Viscoe. Well, I mean, I think he's one of the best stories in not just the SEC, but college basketball for what he's been able to do. But, I mean, teams are going after him.
They're hunting
on defense.
They're hunting them.
On defense. I mean, they're going after him.
Sure. And I think that'll continue.
Sure.
You know, I think the other thing, too, is the Stackhouse tonight in Vanderbilt, does some teams play zone against Tennessee? Because maybe that you have to, but I didn't think Tennessee handled South Carolina's zone very well at all.
I think that's more of a personnel thing because last year and or last couple of years, I mean, I think Rick has some zone answers.
Well, now Washington turned out to be a terrible team, but they absolutely destroyed that zone early in the year.
But I think Rick historically, since he's been here, has some counters to a zone. But I just don't think it. I think it doesn't look as good when you have Grant Williams flashing in there to the foul line.
Well, it doesn't, it doesn't help that Jordan Bowden's not hitting the curl at the free throw line either.
Or you don't have Jordan Bone just blowing by whoever, is in front of him. And we all talk about Lamonte, and this is not the first time it's been mentioned. But if Jordan Bone was on this team, I don't think we're talking about struggling to make the SEC tournament, even with Lamonte's injury.
Yeah, that's what we talked about on TV. I think Lamonte Turner would have come along slower, maybe had a chance to rehab the shoulder a little bit more, maybe you don't get as bad early because you've got Bone, and then all of a sudden maybe Lamonte is here for the back stretch of the schedule.
I think they've beaten Texas A&M. I think they win South
even
Carolina.
Even if you don't have him, even if he's in street clothes for all year, I'm with you. I think having a point guard, I think having Bone, you beat – You got those two more
wins.
There's
16-9, 8-4 in the league, right?
Yeah,
now.
And it's a different conversation.
Minimum.
And somebody that can create their own shot.
And I think that's that was the problem down the stretch of that game Saturday, the last 3.5 minutes. Who was going to make a play? You're asking Vescovi to go. I mean,
he's
you're handing him the ball.
6 weeks of college basketball.
Right.
That tells you all you need to know about this Tennessee basketball team.
Right.
Looked at that team, called a timeout, and drew up. Got his clipboard out and said, "Hey, this kid that was in Uruguay for Christmas,
we're going to face guard.
We're going to face guard him and not let him get the ball." And your senior, I mean, I love him. I mean, I've said this on the board, I've said it on the radio, everything. Jordan Bowden, big fan, great kid, high character, great teammate. But your senior, who has played, I mean, by the time he gets done here, he's going to play even if Tennessee doesn't play a postseason game, he's going to play the third most games in history of anybody in the program. He didn't want it.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't want it at all. Yeah. 28 seconds left in the game.
Being the number one option is not something he's been comfortable with all year long, and that's what you wondered about in the preseason. Last thing about basketball, on a positive note, has John Fulkerson figured it out?
Is this
– I'm not saying he's going to go career high every night, but are we getting to the consistency where Fulkerson is legitimately a potential – double-double guy every
night? I think
he
is. I mean, it's not – and there are going to be some matchups that are more problematic than others, and South Carolina is not the best front line out there. But that being said, I never once thought that I would sit in an SEC arena and watch John Fulkerson score 25 points, ever. when he walked on campus here. I mean, I've always liked him better than others and appreciate what he brings to the table as a guy that can
help
you.
But he was a compliment.
Yeah.
I never
thought that he could be your number one option. And granted, he's probably not it's probably not a great thing that he's your number one option, but he is your number one. I just never thought that he could. I mean, he scored 25, 22, 18 points. He set a career high in points three times in the last six games.
Yeah. Is certainly starting to at least figure out how.
I mean,
and
I tell you,
open
and I wrote this yesterday. He's a chance to be an all-conference player next year as a senior. I'm not saying.
Don't you think he'll be second or third team this year?
I'm not saying it'll happen, but he's got a chance. I mean, which is incredible.
It's a credit. It's a credit to his development.
And I think it bodes great for next year. Great. I mean, I don't think he'll be the best. He won't be the most talented player on the team. If Pons is back. And I don't think – I think there's more of a risk that some European team comes in and
– takes Pons.
Throws money at Pons than there is that he leaves to be a second-round draft pick. And for – one of the reasons I think that is – I don't know how many people know this, but he's married. I mean, he's – I think he may be he's a lot more mature and, maybe ready to get on with his life than a lot of other guys that are juniors in college. But in any event – Tennessee's going to add a lot of talent next year, but those things always work better when you've got some veterans sprinkled into the mix.
Yeah. And
Fulkerson is going to be that.
Well, and he's a guy that you know you're going to get maximum effort, and now he's producing to go with that effort more than he ever has. So for Tennessee right now, it's about can they win their games at home and can they ensure themselves a trip to the NIT and maybe pull off some kind of miracle through the rest of this regular season and the postseason to put themselves in a position to be in the NCAA tournament. It starts tonight. They've got to take care of business at home against Vanderbilt. That's going to do it for this edition of the Blue Water Climate Control VolQuest.com podcast. For Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Jesse Simonton, I'm Brent Hubbs. Thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, everybody.